Welcome back to From My Mother's Basement. I'm your host, David, and this is episode 3, the Pride Edition. June across the country is Pride Month. It's where gay men and gay women, lesbians, queers, transgenders, bisexuals, we all come together and just about, not every city, but a lot of cities across the country, to celebrate our uniqueness, to celebrate our right to be, to celebrate we're here, we're queer, so get over it, so to speak. I was like, what do I talk about this week? It's kind of not really in the theme of the podcast, but, you know, it's pride. You know, I'm a proud gay man, but, you know, it took me a long time to get to where I am now, mentally, and who I am, and being comfortable in my own skin. Been through a lot, so to speak, and it's been a difficult journey. Everybody's coming out story is different. So I'm like, this, you know, I think I'll share with everybody, my coming out story and all the kind of craziness that happened from when I was a closeted, shy, gay boy, I guess I should say, into, the proud gay man I am today. Because I was kind of a late bloomer. I have a family that's very religious. My grandfather was a preacher. My mom was the superintendent of the Sunday school. You know, my sister and I, we were in church, you know, 5 out of 7 days of the week. We lived right next door to our church. And not that I minded, because I enjoyed it. You know, I sung. I was president of the junior usher board. I was president of the choir. Always in some type of leadership role from a youth standpoint. But, you know, as a kid, you know, you're sitting in church and you're listening, because I at one point in time I had a pastor that was, he was one of those fire and brimstone pastors, and when he would talk about God made Adam and Eve and not Adam and Steve, you know, it affected me, you know, and my peers, the kids and things like that. Some of them, you know, they kind of knew I'll swish maybe a little bit too much, and I was very, not flamboyant craziness, but I was a free spirit, and I loved it, even though I had some reservations because I tried to hide it for so long. Because when I was growing up, it wasn't like it is now, where, you know, they're having gay proms and kids are coming out, you know, at 10, 11, 12, 13, that they're gay. And, you know, I didn't have the opportunity. I just wasn't comfortable in doing it. I'm sure I could have and just faced the backlash. You know, I had enough to deal with people calling me gay, calling me fag, calling me all kind of different things. And, that I had to deal with, you know. So I understand, you know, It Gets Better campaign. I understand where that comes from, because that was my life. You know, I lived that life for a long time. People, you know, just didn't like me because they didn't know. But when thinking back on it, I was like, why were those kids even worried if I was gay or not? What, you know, we were supposed to be playing with G.I. Joes and, you know, and riding bikes. But you guys worry about if I'm gay or not, you know, because at one point, you know, sexual maturity, you know, when I was 12, 13, 8th grade, you know, going into high school, I wasn't even thinking about that kind of stuff, you know, and you guys are, you know, calling me fag and stuff, didn't even know what a fag was, you know, it was just kind of insane, that part of my story. But, you know, I got a little more power when I was in college. I kind of had an identity crisis because I knew there were gay people there, and they didn't have, I know they have gay groups now. I went to a private Methodist college, and they didn't have one there. I remember they made us change the Black Student Union to the Minority Student Association, so we wouldn't offend anybody. That's the kind of college I went to. But getting out of college, you know, I went, you know, I had my issues, and I had my boy crushes from, you know, before, And I'm like, I need to act, you know, I just need to. And it wasn't just sex. It was just like, I need to know this feeling that I've been suppressing. What, you know, what I'm going to do about it? Because it was kind of driving me insane. But, you know, I dealt with it for a long time. I remember, and this would have been in my mid-20s. I remember there was a gay bar downtown that's not here in the city anymore. But I just knew, but without anybody telling me, I didn't know anything about gay. I didn't know there was a gay culture in this small town. And I was like, wow, you know, I know that's what the gay people are. So I don't know if something is just something that's kind of magnetically draws you to it. But I was drawn to it, but I never went in. And this was supposedly, from what I hear, I never experienced it. This bar was the What's Happening bar in this town's gay heyday, so to speak. And I would ride my bike, and I would drive past, and I just knew that there was gays in there, so I was trying to listen. You know, I would ride my bike in the evening on Fridays and drive and ride past and see if I could hear something on the patio or if I can get a quick peek in. And of course I did, and I heard some things, but it was enough. But I knew that was a gay bar. Anyhow, that place closed down, and I kind of forgot about the whole I want to go to a gay bar type of thing. And and if anybody remembers, this is before the internet had taken off, and you was able to get on AOL chat and stuff. This was a phone service, and I think they still have them in some places. I've seen advertisements. There is a phone service called Private Lines, and Private Lines was a phone line where you could meet gay, you know, other gay men, and you could record your like your profile, tell them what you. It was like Adam for Adam, but just with the phone. And there wasn't any pictures. And I remember, you know, oh my god, I'm gonna be able to meet somebody. And it was so shady, because they gave you like three ways to pay the fee to use the service, or buy time on the service. And this is before I even had a credit card, so that wasn't even an option. So you either had to mail a check, or you had to drop off your a cash payment at their office, and or what they call was a payment center. And so I didn't want to write a check for Private Lines and have somebody to see that knew me. But I was still, you know, I was still halfway in the closet. You know, I knew it was gay. I was okay with it. It was just, you know, the society issue and the family issue and the friend issue that I was still having. Well, I was pretty much all in the closet, and nobody knew at that point. It was all the suspicions, but nobody knew. And so, so I had to drive to the payment center and give them the cash. And I mean, that was the most nerve-wracking drive that I've ever driven. And I remember it wasn't in a remote area, but where it was, there was nothing else around it. It was like a parking lot and this stone type of building that this looked bizarre. It looked weird. It's kind of out of place, kind of stuck there. And then you would see, I remember driving, was like, okay, David, you need to get up there. You need to put the money. And then it wasn't an office. They had a slit, like a little mail person slit, that you had to write your name and your account number, I think, from the phone service. I don't remember exactly how that went, and put it in an envelope, and then put it through this little thing, and nobody said you didn't get a receipt, and nobody said anything. It was very weird. But the funny thing is, I remember driving up, and you see different cars driving up. I'm like, oh, they're doing the same thing as I'm doing. They're seeing if anybody's seeing them go to this place, and they're trying to see who. And now looking back, they could have been cruising it. I don't know, but I'm like, okay. But I got over it. I go up there and I put my money in there. And I check back in my car and I just kind of run. 2 days later, I have time on the phone line, and I start getting messages, and I'm like, oh my god, there's people that want to meet me. And I was so naive, so insane. And actually, my very first boyfriend came off this site, and he was a nice guy. And actually, we talked a little bit, changed phone numbers. And see, this is before cell phones and before computers. And I was still living at my mother's house, and I was like, oh, how am I gonna call him? So I had to wait till she went to bed, because he was still in school. So he was like 23, 24. I was in my mid 20s, and he was like a TA. And so I was able to call him late at night at his place. He was the RA, not TA, RA for the dorms here in town. And I was able to leave a message for him and call him. And so we talked, and we liked him well enough. Again, this was my first relationship. I was terrified. And so he was openly gay, and he wanted somebody to to be his boyfriend, to be his partner. And he was young. I was just a little older than he was. And so then it came to be the first meeting, the very, very, very first meeting. And so I go to his place, and he didn't lie. You know how they down on these websites and apps and stuff, they lie about what they look like, and they have these pictures from 1902, and they look totally ridiculous when you meet them. And it's not about what you look like; it's about that you lie. And so he looked what he says, and he was like, "Oh, you're so cute," blah, blah, blah. And we're kind of chit chatting back and forth, and we're just talking. This was the first meeting. Of course, I sat in the furthest chair I could away from him, because I was terrified. And like, this is in my face. This is what I wanted. This is what I've been saying that I've been wanting to do forever. And I finally was able to do it. And I was there, and I was in the moment. And And nothing happened, and we just kind of talked, and I was like, okay, we'll talk again. And so, but he couldn't call my house, which, you know, that was a problem. But, you know, we had, you know, subsequent meetings, and this went on for a few weeks without, you know, we eventually started sitting next to each other on the sofa. It was so funny. I'm like, oh my god, you were so crazy, David. And and it was just like we enjoyed each other's company. And of course, I would never, because I was still in that spot. And I feel, looking back at it now, it's like, wow, I was so unfair to this person, because I wasn't, I wouldn't go out in public with it. We didn't do anything public, but you were my in your house boyfriend. And and it was okay with him, because he had a busy schedule, and I had a big busy schedule, things going on with the family and work and things like that. And and so he wants to kiss me, and I'm like, oh wow. Wow. And I remember being very, very, very scared of a kiss, because I knew after this kiss, there was no going back for me. And so I ran. I'm like, you know, we tried, and I just ran. I was like, I have to be sure. And I just ran out the door, and I didn't talk to him for several days. And then I called him, apologized for being a complete dweeb, and I meet him again, and we kissed, and it was absolutely wonderful. It's what I wanted, and it was good, and it was nice. And we end up dating again, not publicly, and I just remember just this thing between he and I. Now I wish I could see him again. I don't know what happened to him. He left the city, and the last time I seen him, you know, I was completely out. He really didn't want to say much to me, but you know, we all have our times. Like, I think at a point in my life, I don't want to date. Of course, he was in his 20s as well, but of course, I wouldn't want to date somebody who's newly out. I can be your friend all day long. I wouldn't touch you out, but we're not going to date, because I think there's some things, there's a process that you need to go through. That's just my opinion, because there's things that I had to process, and everybody's situation is different. And And so he introduced me. Another thing I had to thank him for, he introduced me to Absolutely Fabulous, and we would watch that all night long and hang out. And he was the first person that I was intimate with. Or if that was, that's the story in itself, we wouldn't get into that. And it was good, you know. And then he finally, he moved away, and this situation that happened where he thought I was being disrespectful to him, because I see him out, I'm with my family at a public venue, and I see him with a friend, and this is bad, and don't hold it against me, I was young and naive, and I didn't speak to him, you know, because there's gonna be too many questions from my parents and my family. And it was definitely difficult, to say the least. But you know, we all grow and we all learn, and it was definitely a learning experience at that time. And then shortly after that, you know, we weren't in contact anymore. Another person from this phone line came into my life. And this, I have to say, this was in, had to be 1997. I was in my mid to late 20s, but 1997, 1998, 1999. This was probably, and I don't know how I survived this point in my life. This is one of the, this time in my life was one of the, probably the most difficult things that I've ever had to deal with. It was, I met this guy. And I felt completely head over heels. It was a different feeling because I had dated somebody. That's bad to say, but that I get the initial contact. It was out of the way, and I mean, with all respect to him, because the guy was, he was a good guy, but you know, the nervousness, I shook all the nervousness off, and I wanted to you know, explore more about myself. But anyhow, I met this second guy and thought he was nice. He was very attractive. We instantly clicked, and things were good for about a year. Because again, with my naivety, I might have been naive, but I wasn't a fool. And he actually was a beautician, and he owned his own hair salon. And he had given me a fake name, and I kind of believed this for a year. I heard people calling him different names, because I would go to his shop, and I'm like, why are they calling you this when your name is this? And he thought, oh, that's my nickname. Okay. And you know, I'm gonna let that ride. Okay, it's cool. And so and we had some ups and downs, you know. Because at that point in my life, I'd start going out to the bar. I didn't care who saw me. And again, my parents didn't know. Still nobody knew, except that I had several gay friends that were my clique that I hung with. I had bar friends. And, you know, I was enjoying the bar life, and he was jealous. He couldn't do it because he was so busy. He couldn't hang out with me. But the thing is, we went out to dinner together. We publicly, you know, we would go to late dinners. We would hold hands, we would, you know, kiss and things like that. And but he didn't like me going out. He's like, oh, you're just going out to find somebody to sleep with. I'm like, eh, not really. You're my boyfriend, but this is something you say you can't do with me, so why even you know, be mad at me? That you know, he was not quite a bit older than me, but he was several years older than I am. And you know, I think everybody has their time when they stop doing certain things, so I understood. You don't want to go to the club, you know, I'm going to the club, but this is what I'm going to do. And that was the only thing to do in this town, so you know, why not? And he could say it drove him absolutely crazy that I was going out and stuff. But fast forward past that a little bit, I remember one night we were going out to dinner. He said, well, just meet me at the shop and pick me up, and then we'll just leave from the shop and go out to dinner. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I remember it was very, very cold and rainy. It was going into the winter time. It was right before Christmas. It was probably sometime in mid-November. And so I'm sitting in the shop waiting for him to get finished so we could leave. And one of his employees says to me, have you met such and such as kids? I said, excuse me? She's like, have you met such and such as kids? I'm like, no. You know, because I'm at this point in my life, I'm starting to become the person I am right now, you know. And like I said, I may have been naive, but I wasn't a fool. I'm like, who's kids? And so he quickly runs in there. He's like, she don't know what she's talking about, whatever, blah, blah. And she kind of gave him a funny look. And I'm like, oh, well, I thought all these new people that knew we were dating, you know, that they all accepted me and they all knew me by my first name. And I chatted with them a lot. You know, not that I shared anything personal between he and I, but they, you know, I thought they knew, but obviously they didn't. And so we leave. And so I'm just quiet because I know you've been lying. And so we're driving, and I just purchased a new car. I had purchased a new Camaro. And it raining and I couldn't really see. And so I said, first of all, I need you to tell me, answer one question. Is this your real name? You know? And he's like, yes. And he's like, but I don't want anybody. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, because I didn't know if it was very, very weird because we spent so much time together, that I didn't know he had another life, which he did. And I didn't know how he could have that life with as much time as he spent with me. But anyhow, he did. And obviously, it worked for him. But I'm not getting to all that either. But and so I'm saying, well, you know, do you have any kids? You know, and hopefully, you know, he's like, yes, I do. I said, well, how many kids do you have? And he's like, I said, more than one. He doesn't say anything. I said, more than two. And I said, how many kids you have? You need to tell me. And he says, I have three children. I'm like, what? Because I never in a million years, you know, wanted to be involved. But at this point, you know, I'm committed. Again, I am at a particular age where my heart and my mind was saying, no, my heart was saying, was speaking for my mind, you know, and I wasn't thinking clearly. And so, I asked him, you know, how many children he had. He did tell me he had three. And I said, so where's the mother at? Do they live with the mother or what's going on? And he's like, well, I'm married. What? You know, I'm like, you're married. He's like, yeah, but I'm leaving her. You know, it's not working out. And that's why I don't stay with her. And, you know, and granted, he did have a place that was lightly furnished. And looking back, and I never knew the true story. I think it was a rental property that they owned. And when he got mad at her, he went there. And I guess that was an agreement. But again, that's not important. It's the part that he lied to me. So I just remember stopping in the middle of the street, telling him to get out of my car. I'm like, you need to go. You know, I don't care how you get back to your shop. You just need to go. And so he went and he got out. And so I drive around the block and he's walking. It's raining, kind of snowing, it's cold. I'm like, well, I'm not going to be this mean to this person because I do care about this person. But there's some things that I need to understand. So I told him to get back in. I took him back to his shop, kicked him out. He's like, I'm going to see you again and please don't leave me and all this kind of nonsense. I'm like, I don't know. You know, I need some time to think. And so when I got home, you know, of course I had the long drive home. I was crying and it was ugly. It wasn't very pretty. And so I go home and I'm like, what am I going to do? You know, and so he's calling me. He was calling me at home. He would call me at work in the morning because I opened where I worked at. And I was there by myself in the morning. He'd call and say, are you okay? And he sent me flowers one day. And just, you know, and I'm like, okay, he's trying, and he's doing all the right things to reel me back in. And of course, I fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker, I fell for it. And then I accepted it. I'm like, okay, you're married. You say you're leaving her. You know, when a married man tells you they're going to leave their wife and they have a lot to lose, don't believe it. Because not to say that it's not going to happen, but it's not going to happen. I'll put it this way. It's probably not going to happen on the timetable you want it to happen. You know, here, I want to be in a relationship. I'm newly into it. I found somebody that I connected with on all these levels, and we had fun together. But you had a secret life, and so we progressed on, and it went on for about another, until it got warm again. We got through Christmas, had a big fight at Christmas, but because now I'm jealous of your wife, because this is why you can't do these other things with me, because you have to be the family man. And I understood that on one level, but you made a choice to bring me into your bullshit, so to speak. And so, but I accepted it, you know, and I had to own that part. I accepted what you brought to the table, even though you didn't bring it till a year and a half later. And I remember us doing things, and then one fateful night, I'm at his shop waiting for him to go get off work, and this lady drives up in a car. It's the wife, and he was like, "Don't move and don't say anything." I'm like, "Okay." I said, "I don't want no stuff," because I'm like, I don't know if she knows what's going on. I don't want her to come here to shoot me. And so he says, "No, it'll be all right. You know, I have friends." Okay, cool. But, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and I've never met your wife. Anyhow, she comes in, and she gives me a glare. And then she takes him to the back, and I hear some loud words, but words. And he gives her some mail, and they're kind of chit-chatting back and forth. She never speaks, and he never introduces me. I'm like, that's a problem. In my head, I knew, I'm like, this is going to be a problem. And so she leaves the door, leaves the store. And then like three to 5 minutes later, the store phone rang, the shop phone rings, and it's her. And she's like, "I don't know who's up there, and you can introduce me," and blah, 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 blah. He's like, "Well, if you want to meet David, you can come back and meet David." I'm like, that this is crazy. And so I'm ready to hit it. And he's like, so he hangs up the phone. He's like, "She don't tell me what to do. So this is what I put up with, and she don't trust me." Well, of course she doesn't trust you, because you're out here, you know, messing around with men behind her back, you know. And obviously this has been a problem with you guys, you know, because everything start falling into place. And then we had kind of a big fight, and I was done, but I was hurting. I was hurting so much. And I didn't talk to him for a couple of days, but then, one day at work, I get a phone call, and they're like, "There's somebody on the phone asking for David and my last name." And I'm like, "Huh, nobody would ever call," because, you know, in the industry I worked in, everybody knew my first name. I wasn't the contact person, but the people that the accounts I dealt with, you know, they knew me by my first name, and they wouldn't ask me, they wouldn't say Mr. Or I'm like, "Ooh, is it a bill collector?" You know, you get those, like, who do I owe? So you start thinking about those things. And I answered the phone. I said, "Yeah, this is David. How can I help you?" And so this person is the wife on the phone, and she says, I'm going to ask you some questions. I want you to be honest with me, and blah, blah, blah. And mind you, I was hurting still. I was still hurting, and I didn't, you know, not that I didn't. I wasn't going to, and I got a quick temper, and I have a quick mouth too. And, you know, I'm not going to let you talk to me crazy. And so she says to me, she's like, "I want to know if you're having an affair with my husband." I'm like, "Well, that's wrong what you're saying, because he's having an affair with me." And so she blows up. She's like, well, this has happened before. I'm like, before? She's like, and I took care of that person, and I'll take care of you, and I'll cut you into little bitty pieces, and all this kind of craziness. She knew my name. She knew what kind of car I drove. Of course, she had met me, but she knew a lot about me. And I'm like, listen, lady, your problem's not with me. It's just like with all these Jerry Springer episodes when the chick has a problem and her man's cheating on her with another chick. Why you got a problem with the chick? Your problem is with your man. And like, and this, I said, your problem's not with me. I didn't do anything. He created this for you and for me, because now we're both in it. Obviously, you have a plenty of history because you're married to him. And she went on, well, we're high school sweethearts, and I've been with him since he was 17, and you're not going to break up our marriage. And I'm like, look, lady, I'm not breaking up nothing. He's breaking up your marriage. I was innocent until he came into my life. I said, I will say, when I found out he was married, I should have left him alone, but I didn't. And so she went on, and so she had said so much crazy stuff to me. So I say what everybody says, and this was a young mind and a young mouth talking. I say, well, the next time you kiss him, you know what you're doing, and you can fill in the rest. I'm not going to go there. And she lost her mind, so I just hang up the phone. And so about, I don't know, it could have been because he called me like 20 minutes later. Why'd you tell her all that stuff? Why did you say that to her? You should have said you didn't know what she was talking about. And I'm like, you know what? You need to handle your marriage. Leave me alone. Again, I was mad. Leave me alone. Excuse me. And go deal with that, because I'm at work. She's calling me. I don't have time for this. She's threatening me. Again, I couldn't tell my parents because they didn't know I was gay. You know, at this point, I think I told my sister that I was dating him. And then she had friends that lived in the same city that kind of knew, and they kind of put the word out. But my parents didn't know at the time. And so anyhow, about, I would say 2 to 3 weeks later, I may have seen him one more time, and I think I'd seen her drive past, and I was playing with my life, and I should have got out, but like I said, my heart was in it, you know. I keep on saying that, but you know, and my mind wasn't working right. But I was snapped into reality real quick when the sheriff went to my mom's house to serve me a subpoena, and it was an order of protection. Now, mind you, I live in a little city. They live in a little city smaller than mine, where they lived at. And they had political connections to the court. They had concocted this story about me stalking a married man for sex. And mind you, now this is when cell phones had started coming in, and I had one. And so I had to get a lawyer. Well, anyhow, let me go back a step. The sheriff goes to my mother. I'm not home, but they serve the subpoena to my house, and my mother gets it. And I thought they had to serve you, but they took it to the house. And my mom calls me on the phone. She's like, bring your butt home. I don't know what's going on. The sheriff says that you have an order of protection against you for stalking, and I need to know what the hell is going on. When I say everything about me went out of me at that point, and I start thinking clearly, and that drive from my job to my mother's house, I'm like, what's going to happen to me? This is some crazy stuff. And so I get there. So I had to tell her the story. I had to explain, and she was upset. She's like, I can't believe and I got the whole church story and the whole church speech, and I'm going to hell. And she was mad, and she wasn't going to tell my daddy, and I had to tell him. And I was just sick. I mean, I was sick for like 3 days. And so she's like, you better handle this, and you know, don't be having no share. And I totally understood where she was coming from, but what she didn't, and I wish, and I love my mother. I have to say, like, that's the parent that I'm taking care of now, in her basement again. I wanted a little bit more support, and I didn't get that support, and I was hurt. And mind you guys, I've never spoken this way to anyone. I've never told anybody this story. People that have been in my life in the last 10 years, nobody knows this story, because it's something that I needed to drop and move away from and never speak of it again, because it was because what I went through was so difficult. I'm still surprised that I made it through, and so I ended up because I wasn't going to take the rap for something that they're making up on me, because it was a lie. And I'm a fighter. I will fight, you know, I will stand up for my rights. And so I hired a lawyer, and, part of the same community, part of the same political system. I didn't know this at the time. And so he says, and so he's getting his things together to help me and get this case and get this all dropped and make these people leave me alone. And so it was funny, because before the court case happened, I had joined a gay bowling league. And he happened to be on it. I'm like, you're around here telling people that I'm stalking you for sex and all this kind of, he tried to have me thrown off the bowling league. I'm like, dude, what is your problem? You know, why are you doing this? It's your wife. And I knew it was his wife putting him through it, because they had a lot of assets together, I come to find out. And, you know, she wasn't giving up anything, you know. And I've seen these shows online. I can't remember. There was a particular show, and it's an older one, which when I watch it, it's like kind of taboo. It's like something visitor or something visitor, where when the woman finally caught her husband in a relationship with this man that she knew and all this stuff. Anyhow, that's how I felt. I'm like, Jesus, come on, something help me. And so anyhow, and so we're at the court case, and so I had got some phone records from my cell phone, showing where we had called each other. And then I went and ordered my lawyer had subpoenaed some documents from the private line service where we met. And then I had a couple of friends that give affidavits. It was another gay couple that we used to hang out with. And so I get to court, and so I don't know who got to my lawyer. He's like, well, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to go in here and say, yeah, you did it. You're sorry. And they'll slap you on the hands, and you, and then this will all be over. I'm like, dude, I paid you, and this is what you want me to do at this point? This is the day before the trial. I said, you know what? You're fired, and I'll handle this myself. And so I go in there alone. My mom didn't want to hear anything about it. My sister didn't want to hear anything about it. My dad didn't know. I did have one friend with me, but she didn't want to be too involved, because she had a kind of a high profile job that she didn't want that. But she was there to support me, and a silent supporter, and so because she knew about the relationship as well. And so I get in there, didn't know what to do. And he's like, do you have anybody representing you today? And so the prosecutor is with them. And it's so funny when I get in there and I see him and her, he's grown, which is it's in now, but he's grown this full beard, a full mustache, has a baseball cap on. And I'm like, when I seen you at the bowling alley, you had booty shorts on and blonde hair. What's going on? I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. But at that point, I'm like, I'm not ashamed of who I am anymore, you know, because I was ashamed and I hid, and it was, you know, I wasn't at that point. That was kind of what turned in my life. I'm like, I'm not ashamed of who I am. I can't help that you are, but I'm not going to allow you to put me in your mess when I did nothing wrong. And only thing I did wrong was not leaving you when I found out the truth. And so the judge, he was like, well, you know, how you answer? I said, well, none of that's true what they're saying. And so I got to interview him, and so he lied. I was like, how do we know each other? He said, well, you found out I was a hairdresser and you just assumed I was gay, and then you just start trying to hound me to get me to have sex with you, and you was mad because I wouldn't. And so I, you know, I showed the court my documents. I was like, well, this is not true. Me and this man have been in a relationship for, at this point, a year and a half. Here's the phone records. Here's the affidavits for another gay couple that we hang out with. And so the prosecutor was trying to make me shut up. He was like, well, we're know what this the defendant's trying to do, and we don't want to sully our my client's name in front of everybody in court, because it was the open court. I'm like, well, what about my name? You know, you guys are not having a problem doing it to me. And I said, I'm not standing for it. And so the judge looked over everything, and he says, do you want to give a final argument? So I had to get up on the stand, because I didn't have a lawyer, and talk. And the prosecutor would not ask me anything. And so I told him, I said, you know what? You know, I'm gay. I'm very proud to be gay. You know, I have no problem being gay. I said, there's people in my life that don't know, but after I leave here today, they will know. And not because of this court case, because that's who I am right now in this moment. And I remember looking over at him, and she's kind of not really crying, but her face is red. And if she had a gun, she probably would have blew me away. And so I just told my story. I said, this is what's going on. I said, I'm young, I'm naive, I believe this person's lies. I said, but I'm not going to be a scapegoat for someone's homosexuality anymore. I said, I'm proud of who I am. I'm not going to be a scapegoat because he can't be who he is. I said, and the judge looks at me. He's like, you know, you can step down. And so we're waiting for the verdict. And he said my last name. He's like, I'm very sorry that these people put you. He didn't say that. He put you through this. He's like, I apologize. I apologize from the court. He's like, this is ridiculous. He said, I don't even know why you're here. He said, if you're doing anything, he said, don't talk to these people. Because I might have made some crazy phone calls to him. But he's like, don't antagonize them or anything. He's like, just, you know, go live your life. They have a problem, and you're innocent of all charges. Have a good day. Oh, this is what it was. When I got off the stand, you know, something to me, I don't know if it was God or because I have a smart mouth. I've always had a smart mouth all my life. And I told the prosecutor, I'm like, you just lost. And I sit down, because there's something that takes over when you know you're right, and that kind of confidence, and when you know you're proud in that person. So I had to thank him for making me proud of who I am, because if I hadn't went through that really difficult, there was other things that happened, but that was pretty much a synopsis. I've been talking for 3 hours. The story, if it wasn't from him and all everything that he had done, I wouldn't be who I am today, you know. And so I guess I thank him, kind of, you know. And I moved on from him. Of course, there was a couple other run-ins, you know, from the years, but that was because he was mad, because he ended up divorcing the woman. Or I don't know if she divorced him, but ended up getting a boyfriend, you know. But y'all all hated me. I'm like, you're just as stupid as he is. He's lying to you. But I'm like, that's fine. You can live your life, because you're still lying. You're not able. I don't know it today if I would even say anything to him, you know, because I am back in the same area. And I was gone for, I lived in Atlanta for a long time, but back in the same area. And, you know, yeah, maybe he's changed. I doubt it. You know, once a liar, always a liar. I do know that he's dating someone, and has been dating with someone. You know, it wasn't too long after our situation, it was prior to me moving to Atlanta, he was dating someone, and I did see him at the one of the bars here, and they were trying to sully my name throughout the club, but nobody bought it. You know, a few people bought it, because there was several of the, and I was surprised, people that I knew, and they was like, well, you had no business dating a married man, and you know what you was getting into. I'm like, why do I have to justify what I did when he's the one that told all the lies? You know, why is that? And but those people, they're not a part of my life now, so I guess their opinion didn't matter because they're still doing the same old things in the same city and haven't progressed anymore. But you know, that's their cross to bear, not mine. But yeah, that's my coming out story. And you know, and I've had good relationships since then and single right now. But that's because I moved back to this small area where they actually did have, you see the picture on the page, that they actually had it up in my city, which that's really progressive. One pride flag in the downtown area supporting Pride Month, which I think that's kind of good. You know, it's progressive with the city. They're down to two bars now. I don't care to go out because I'm at a particular age that doesn't appeal to me anymore. But I have a lot of other stuff going on life-wise that I don't have time for bar drama. But I do have a set of gay friends here that we hang out on occasion, and I still have my deep connections to Atlanta, and I do miss Atlanta. I miss Atlanta Pride, even though I don't think it's in June anymore. The last several years it's been in October. But I know Indy had their Pride this weekend. I think Los Angeles. I think Chicago's at the end of the month. I'm going to try to go to one of the closer events, maybe St. Louis or Louisville. And I think they're coming up in the next few weeks. But, you know, happy Pride to everybody. Like I said, that was my story. Like I said, I've never told it before. So if you have any comments, you know, you can reach us at frommymothersbasement.blogspot.com. You can comment on the show here. Take a listen to my other show on Blog Talk Radio. It's not as serious. I probably will be going back over this for them. It's the 5x5. It's blogtalkradio.com/5x5, and the 5 is a numeric. You can reach us over there. And thank you guys for listening. I know a lot of people won't agree how I handled the situation, but I'm proud of who I am, because after that, I just kind of fully blossomed. Oh, and I didn't tell you guys, I did. When I came home that night, my dad kind of knew, and we had a conversation. He's like, well, why didn't you tell me? And I'm like, I thought you would hate me. And he's like, well, I can't hate you because you're my son. You're always going to be my son. And I was like, wow, this is my dad's one of the most manly men ever. And we fished together on the weekends and stuff. We did the father son thing. And he was, I support you. He's like, and it's funny because when he said, when we had our conversation, he said, if this man was married and you was messing with him, what made you think that if he was going to cheat on her, that didn't make him a liar, that he wouldn't go do something to you? He said, I don't understand that. You're smarter than that, David. I'm like, you know, I didn't know. I was being naive. I said, but can't be fooled again. But so that was really good. Then my mother, she did come around, you know, not that she likes it, but it was a long road for my mother and I. And, but we conquered it, and she supports me, and I think she wants me to be happy, and whomever I choose to date. I just think she doesn't want all the drama, because after all the drama with the married guy, she didn't want me to go through that again, because it was difficult. But you know, thankfully I made it, and if my story can reach somebody and tell them that, you know. And not that I'm bashing married guys. I know there's married guys out there that want to be out of a relationship. But, you know, you need to get out of your relationship before you bring somebody else into your bullshit. You know, I was lucky because what I went through changed my whole spin on how I viewed myself and how I thought society viewed me. And once my parents accepted me, and once I accepted myself, I was proud to be who I was, and that was okay, and I was okay. And you know, if you have somebody who supports you, You know, it could just be one person who has your back, or you even just embracing who you are, you know, whether you're gay, bisexual, transgendered, lesbian. And if you're dealing with that, you know, deal with it, embrace it, and you'll be a stronger person and you will be proud. Happy Pride Month to everybody. I hope you guys are enjoying different Pride events around the country, around the world. Hopefully I will see you out. Email me. There's a spot on the blog. Email me your Pride pictures. I want to put them up. I want to share some of my pictures from Atlanta Pride, from past years, and we'll test this subject again in the future. Hope you guys have a great week, and we will see you next time on From My Mother's Basement. Good night.